Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 Years of Radio, 100 Years of Hitmakers, where we celebrate a century of country radio hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hi, I'm Brian Ives, managing editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with some of country's biggest songwriters. We're digging deep, talking about some of their biggest songs. Now, you might not know all these people's names, but you should. They've written songs that you have definitely sung along to. And this week, we are talking to Daniel Tashian. He co-wrote Brett Eldredge's Gabrielle, as well as a whole bunch of songs from Casey Musgrave's Golden Hour album. So let's just get into it.
Was it just the wrong time, Gabrielle?
So tell me about writing Brett Eldredge's Gabrielle.
Well, Brett is kind of a man of mystery, and he's still a bit of a, there's still a mystery about him to me because, you know, when we were working, a lot of times he would just sort of appear when it was, you know, time to do. I mean, we hung out, but he likes to take like a lot of time on his own to think about stuff, and he walks, and now I think he runs, and he's sort of, you know, it's kind of a mysterious cat, which I like. You know, we were talking one day and we started talking about those kind of songs like, well, honestly, like that really just have this kind of warm kind of, not 70s, but nostalgic kind of feeling about them. It could be any decade. And then we started writing this song, and he had this name that was, I'm assuming that it was someone that he had been in a relationship with. And he started telling this story and singing this story about this woman that never did quite become what, you know, he had hoped it could be. Now, this is all, you got to understand, Brian, this is all extrapolations that I'm sort of making about what was going through his mind. To really know what was going through his mind, because he wrote most of the lyrics to it, you know, you'd have to ask him. But I was at the piano when we were writing the song, and I had come up with a kind of a descending figure, and Ian was playing, I think, playing bass and drums at the at the same time, which is something that he likes to do. And we kind of stumbled into this groove together, and Brett just started singing over that, some things that he had been thinking about. And then we kind of, it all happened fairly quickly. And then we sort of picked up the 12 string and started putting that in between the different, the jugga jungs kind of that come in between the, I don't think I'm doing a very good job of describing anything right now, but, that was how that song sort of came together. And then when we recorded it, it was the first song we recorded for his album. And I remember he was like, I want to be out there in the room. And the piano was in the room. And that instantly, as a producer, I realized that if I hit a bad note on the piano, it would be going into his vocal mic. But he was just so enthusiastic about wanting to be right out in the live room. All my dreams of having sort of an easy, fun, relaxing day in the studio were out the window, and I just immediately started sweating, and it was just, so I can hear nervousness in my playing because that was our very first day, and I didn't want to hit a bad note. And I'm by no means that a prodigy on the piano. I have a very, very simple way that I play that's just serviceable at best, and it's often just very tenuously hanging on. I'm not sort of confidently cruising through songs on the piano. It's something that I have to really sort of focus on in order to achieve anything usable at all. So it was memorable for me in the sense that that was the first song we recorded. Then when we came in and listened to the playback, we all felt very excited.
We never got very far, but girl, wherever you are, I wish you well.
And so you say he's a mysterious guy. I mean, so he didn't go into too much detail about who Gabrielle is.
No, you know, he did sort of say that there was someone who might, that song might catch them by surprise. And I like that when, you know, someone sings about their life in an autobiographical way. You know, Joni Mitchell singing about David Geffen on that Free Man in Paris. You know, this is a literal conversation that she had.
I can still see you standing there, sun shining behind your dress, your silhouette, so perfect.
I like those little touches of real life when songwriters bring them into songs, and I encourage that, you know.
Was it your heart or mine?
Was it just the wrong time, Gary?
I think people, most things in country music are sort of a fairly constructed way of going about it. It's pretty strategic. It's like a, you know, you get a hook, like a beer in the headlights, or, you know, it's sort of a, and then you kind of write pointing towards that. But this was a different kind of song. This was a song, I think he's sort of singing about, you know, it's hard for certain people, and I think it is hard for a lot of young people right now, to fall in love, you know, in this age of, you know, Bumble and Tinder and all that kind of stuff. I think it creates just a harder, what do I know? I mean, you know, what do I know?
Well, you're extrapolating from, you know, your experiences of being around the guy. So it's, you know, fair for you to speculate a little bit.
Yeah. I think he just sort of, you know, I think it is tougher. And also, and then even if you're a person that everybody kind of knows who you are, then that adds a whole other layer of difficulty to the dating thing. But we shouldn't focus on the difficulties, because, you know, that's like going, well, it's going to be really hard to storm the beach of Normandy. I mean, the Germans have the advantage here because we're coming out of the water and they're behind barricades. So really, this is going to be, you know, we shouldn't talk about the obstacles that they face, because they're going to find their way.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but this album coincided with, he used to be really, really big on social media. He actually got me on Snapchat because I was interviewing him and he put me in one of his snaps.
Oh,
and
nice.
So I'm like, oh my God, I got to see this. But he overshared a lot. And then during this album, I think he ditched all of his social media. So that might've been a sea change for him, just as far as how he lives his life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, you would reach a point where if your entire sort of universe was revolving around that, and mine currently during this sort of COVID times is revolving around the phone. I know I've got children and it's really embarrassing to say, but I saw a screen time thing pop up and it said your average screen time. It was like 11 hours a day that my phone was on. Now, to be fair to me, I was listening to a lot of podcasts while I was doing chores around the house and things like that. So that may have made the time go up. But in general, you know, social media is, in general, you know, it's a big part of young people's lives. And so for him to make that decision to kind of find another road, and I think that plays into, you know, I think it was a good thing for him, because, I mean, look at the songs the guy's coming up with. You know, he's tuning out to what everyone else is doing and tuning into his own heartbeat, you know?
I think also for artists of his era, you know, social media is probably really useful when you're trying to get on board, you know, when you're trying to get people
to know who
you are.
Get your career going, yeah.
But then
yeah.
Once they do, you know, and then a lot of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people know who you are, then it's a completely different prospect, because it's like, okay, I'm done sharing with all of you guys. Like, you know, I have my record deal, I could tour, all that stuff. I don't really want to tell you every single thing that's going on in my life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was sort of my interpretation of how he changed, because a couple of years before that, he was one of the most savvy social media artists in country music. And then mm-hmm. I think he just realized to himself, this worked for me really well when I needed it. But at this point, I need a little bit more privacy than I did 3 years ago, 5 years ago or whatever. And he made, you know, I mean, some people can't unplug, but he mm-hmm. made a good decision to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because it's got energy has to go somewhere. And if it's not going into Instagram and it's not going into Snapchat or whatever, it's going to go somewhere. So it's going to go into music. It's going to go into a thought of a lyric. It's going to go into exercising. It's going to go into, you know, we're all filled at the beginning of the day with life enthusiasm sometimes, you know, and I don't know. I think it's healthy.
I would agree. Do you remember the first time you heard the song on the radio?
Man, wow. That is just a exquisite thrill. That's as good as it gets for a songwriter. And if you could add that and then you could be with a beautiful woman having an orange popsicle at the same time, then you're really, you've died and gone to heaven. I mean, there's no thrill greater than hearing a song that you've written on the radio. And there's a wonderful sound to songs on the radio. It's like when they get compressed and sent out over the airwaves, they never sound like that anywhere else, you know? And so, yeah.
Most artists who are on the radio probably don't think of it this way, but it's like, it's different than you playing it or somebody else playing it. It's like somebody somewhere is making the decision to play that song and you just happen to be hearing it, but they're not playing it because they know you're listening. And there's something
I heard it was going up the charts, which I was excited to hear that.
Yeah, know? I think it's doing pretty well on the charts right now, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask about the Casey record. Obviously a standout album in her career, standout album in yours.
And the Grammy goes to...
Golden Hour.
Casey Musgraves!
I made this record with these two guys right here, Ian Fitchuk, Daniel Tashian.
Talk about the effect that that record has had on your career.
Well, you know, it's funny because when we were at the Grammys, Shane McAnally, and he was one of the wonderful songwriters that participated in writing songs for that album. He was one of the, I think Rainbow was one of the ones that he had written with her. And maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. Definitely Space Cowboy. But anyway, he came over to me and he said, now you can finally breathe. And I mean, you know, there was so much truth in what he said because, you know, not that you live and die by these things, but when you've got all, you know, you're out there in your sort of hometown, you've got, you know, your hometown is all sort of rooting for you. You know, you want to bring home a little bacon. And we did in this particular situation. It does kind of feel like, okay, you know, that's a moment. And then the next day, I went to Bert's house, and I'm Bert Bacharach, who, you know, you were probably aware that I was doing some music with him, but maybe you weren't, I don't know.
Yes.
But anyway, he's got all kinds of awards, and I said, you know, Bert, what do you think when you look at all those awards? And he says, I think what's next? So, you know, he doesn't like to, you know, rest on his laurels too much. And but it does. It is a nice thing to be recognized in that way because and to be able to share it with friends. Casey and Ian are dear friends that I love very much. And to share an experience like that is just so sweet. I mean, you're backstage and you've got your arms around each other and you're like, man, we did this. We were just, you know, sort of humming and strumming in the same little garage that I'm in now. And like we brought this all the way out here, you know. It's just kind of amazing. It blows your mind, you know. Just no downside to it, really. I also think when you go in, if I go into more situations like where there's awards involved and stuff like that, I don't feel I don't know, as much pressure about it in a certain way, because I feel like I've already kind of like won some of those things, you know. Can kind of just relax a little bit more about it.
I think that's one of the few albums of the past decade in any genre, really, that was sort of deemed a classic almost as soon as it came out. It just seemed like universally everybody thought it was great.
Yeah,
that's my take. I don't know what your perspective is, having been a part of the creation of it.
Oh, I mean, just a joy to work on something like that. I mean, well, my thought, you know, was there were so many things about that situation that were positive. And it was a leap of faith sort of on her part. I mean, I'd done some things, but I haven't really done anything that anybody would sort of go, oh yeah, that's the move right there. Let's get that guy. You know, I was just kind of sort of some random person. I don't know. So, but she really believed in what we were working on together and that people would enjoy it. And to find out that they do is wonderful.
How was the connection made? Because I remember her first record got a good amount of attention. The second one seemed to be like, all right, maybe.
Well, it was Ian because he. Well, I wrote with her years and years ago, but we really just talked, so I knew her. But then it was Ian who had played on some of those records. Like, I think he played on Pageant Material, and he might have played on the other one as a session man, you know. And he said that he mentioned to her that she should come over and write a song with me and Ian. And she said, okay. So it was Ian that suggested to her that she come over and we start working on some songs. So,
wow. And so I know she's obviously going through some stuff now, but has there been talk of you guys doing her next record, or is that still open?
Yes, we've got some new material that we're working on, and you know, she just went through a divorce,
yeah.
And so you know, you have to sort of let the let the swelling go down a little bit, an event like that, you know, but you do bounce back from those things, but it takes a minute because, you know, it's just a life change. So, but we've got some new songs that I feel really excited about. So, I'm hoping that we'll get back to making some music, which is what I really, you know, want to do.
It's an interesting point though you make too, because it's like, you know, the songs that maybe she was writing 5 months ago or whatever before the pandemic might not feel like where she's at now, given what she's been through, but hopefully she'll work with you guys again, because that really is a magical album.
Well, thanks for that, Brian. And I hope so too. I think we'll get to do another record here pretty soon.
So quick question about Kurt Bacharach. Does he live in Nashville?
No, he lives in LA.
That's what I thought. But I know so many people have moved there recently. It's hard to keep up with. It just feels like Nashville is the place to be for musicians now, way more than New York or even LA.
Well, I mean, I grew up here, so I guess so. For me, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. There were times when I wished that I was in like a cooler scene, like more of a New York scene where there's more like, you know, Brooklyn electronic bands and, you know, or you know, bands that went to art school, because, you know, Nashville could be pretty, it was pretty like sleepy in the 90s.
Right. Just, well, it's like just either you were Garth and Clint or you were not. And that was, those were the choices. Mm-hmm.
There's more diversity, I think, happening here now, so it feels good. But there was a time when I just, man, I wanted to be out of here.
But anyway, man, well, thank you for giving me the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man, no problem. Thanks for the good questions, man, and insightful observations as well. Great talking to you. Call me anytime.
All right, take care, Daniel.
All right, you too.
Thanks to Daniel Tashian for spending so much time with us, and thanks to you for listening. Next week, we've got Thomas Archer, who's co-written songs with Jason Aldean and Luke Combs, including Lovin' On You, and a bunch of other songs. We'll see you next week.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hitmakers.